All right, so now we come to the part where it's like we were talking about this, and it's like, you know what? We need to put this into a podcast. This is important. It's come up so many times that, and it's like, so then it was brought up, like, what was it, last night it was brought up? It came up?
Yeah.
And
two or three days in a row.
And I was being really emphatic on the point, and then somebody decided that they needed to defend the other side. And I thought they were kind of rude about it, but maybe you guys don't agree with my analysis on it.
Say there was rudeness, and not say whether it was coming from one side or the other or both.
I was there. So, of course, there was rudeness. It's my only form of communication. So, and then it seemed to come up the next day, so yesterday, again. And I kind of feel like, you know what, we need to get this done. And so this is about, it comes up over and over again. And in fact, I would have to say that at this point in time, this is probably 45% of the interest in building a rocket mass heater is to put it in a greenhouse.
And we've talked about this being a great first project. Because if you got a house and it's insured and you need to go through this permitting process or decide whether you're ready to rebel or just wait two more years till your mortgage is paid off, the outbuilding idea, putting it in a greenhouse or a detached workshop, is not going to invalidate your home insurance, right? So people wanting a first project and people just wanting to play around with it, you know, even in places where it's totally legal to build one.
Right.
Greenhouse. Neat idea.
Greenhouse.
So put the, you know, you're putting a little stove, maybe you put the barrel outside the greenhouse, maybe it's inside, but then you vent it through a greenhouse bed, or maybe you put it, make a bench on the side of the greenhouse, and then you know, how do you put the exhaust out? Ernie's done one where the exhaust just went 50 feet downhill and exited outward and down, and people have put them up through the roof, also just use a conventional chimney. But this idea, so putting one in a greenhouse is a great way to play around. It's a great way to create a warm space that you can play with a rocket stove in that has some of the ventilation issues that you get in a home. Like, it's different than just making one outdoors in your backyard. It's sheltered, and it's giving you some more ideas of the complexities of, like, how to do the exhaust out of a building and stuff like that.
However,
there's
always, it seems, someone who wants to exhaust the greenhouse gases into the greenhouse rather than out of the greenhouse.
Maybe that's where it's coming from. Is the CO2 is called a greenhouse gas.
Yeah,
to get this stuck in their heads and back in the subconscious. Okay, go ahead.
To help the plants grow.
Mm.
Which
plants
is...
Plants eat CO2, right?
Because plants eat CO2.
We learned that in the fourth grade.
Plants take in CO2 and make oxygen, and people take in oxygen and make CO2, and every time you breathe, you lose weight. And that's where the pile of stuff under the tree comes, is from the air. It's an exciting part of the cycle of life to learn about, but it turns out life is fucking complicated.
There's a lot more to it, it turns out, than what they teach you in the fourth grade. What?
Was not the whole story.
Was our fourth grade education somehow, like...
I don't even remember them. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things they don't teach you in fourth grade about how life works, including how reproduction works. For example, it's these things that they figure you're going to pick up later. And one of these things that most people don't pick up later, that everybody at the table knows more about than me, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm that pushy, is in the daytime, plants photosynthesize.
I'm going to make sugar out of sunlight and CO2.
In the nighttime, they do this respiration where they're sucking water up and they're using oxygen and they're releasing a little bit of that CO2 again.
Now, wait a minute. Where are they getting that oxygen?
From the air? I mean, if you look at a tree, it's a really great filter shape. They're all these little sponge-like filters. They're shaped a lot like lichen and algae and sea creatures that filter things. You know, they're a filter that's constantly sucking nutrients out of the air.
So now there has been proof that people have grown some plants in a greenhouse environment
and added CO2.
And they added CO2, they like brought in a tank of CO2 and then that went
right.
And they measured the CO2 level in the greenhouse and they found that if they increased the CO2 level by a factor of 4, which CO2 in air is tiny, but if they increase it by a factor of 4, so it goes from teeny, teeny, tiny to just teeny, tiny, then the plants do grow much more.
Yeah.
To put this in perspective, we have like parts, I think it's parts per billion in the atmosphere. You can look up what the scale is, but we went from like around 200 pre-industrially to we're now around almost 400. There's this movement to try to hold it at 350.
Yeah.
In the age of the dinosaurs, I believe that number was about 4,000 parts of carbon dioxide per billion or whatever in the atmosphere. So there are a lot of plants that are still around from that period that are very, very well adapted to higher CO2 levels. There's a major issue, though, with the difference between injecting some CO2 using a tank or a chunk of dry ice boiling like a little witch's cauldron, scooting it across the planting bed or something, where you're adding CO2. You're not changing the balance of other gases in the environment.
This would be a good time to list off what are the most of gas breakdown in air.
You're looking at mostly nitrogen. It's like
80%.
A lot of oxygen, almost 20%. And I think nitrogen is 79. Oxygen's about
19 or 20.
And there's 1%, which is mostly argon, and the carbon dioxide has to kind of share that 1% with the argon and all the other gases in the world.
There's a bunch of other stuff,
Yeah. So there's not a lot of carbon dioxide, but it turns out it's kind of important for the life cycle. And in the age of the dinosaurs, there was a lot more, but there was still a lot of oxygen, huge amounts of oxygen in the air as well.
Because they had the plants.
They were transporting
at nighttime.
Yeah.
And they were simple plants. Yeah.
If instead of injecting a little bit of CO2 and boosting that percentage from, say, what is it, 0.12%, like you're changing the amount of that 1% that it has, if instead of that you put in a combustion device that is converting some of the oxygen to carbon dioxide by burning it, you're now reducing the oxygen concentration and increasing the carbon dioxide. This has been done, I think some of the guys were talking about like natural gas burners, like methane burners or propane burners, where it's a very simple fuel that breaks down very cleanly, same kind of fuels that we use in a gas stove in the kitchen. So the exhaust from those is mostly water. You're also boosting the moisture and warmth of the greenhouse by using something like that in it, and it's a very controlled, clean flame.
Which in a way, a rocket mass heater is kind of, putting out steam and CO2. And that's where they get the idea that, hey, I'm going to just wrap that into the green.
In the main part of the burn, it's an extremely clean exhaust. It's cleaner than, I can't think of any wood-based fire that's cleaner. But it still puts out that little bit of smoke at the beginning. There's still the possibility that if you contain the whole thing in the greenhouse, you might get down to a low enough oxygen concentration that the fire goes out, and then you're putting out a lot of dirty, incompletely burned carbon compounds, carbon monoxide.
Not to mention the fact that now you're pretty much out of oxygen.
You're out of oxygen. Your plants are going to die at night or from the smoke, and let alone a person walking in there. You have the possibility of fainting due to high CO2 or low oxygen. And then nobody hauls you out and you asphyxiate in your sleep, having to pass out. Well, and you also have the possibility of slow killers, where things like carbon monoxide just give you sort of fatigue and headache as it slowly robs your body of the ability to process.
Yeah.
And smoke inhalation, where that's a fine particulate that's going to damage your lungs over time.
It's just stupid to route an exhaust product into a place where you're going to be. You put exhaust products outside. Let the trees deal with it. They know how. This is not an unnatural exhaust product. And they need the other stuff that's in there as well. Don't stick it in with your plants where you don't know what it is and you have to live in there. I mean, it's just silly. Come on, would you route your box stove into your greenhouse? It puts out the same things.
It's also much dirtier. And I think
it puts out the same things.
It's a net source of carbon dioxide. Anyway,
yeah.
Just like there are a lot of other sources of carbon dioxide that are safer and that are also going to give you, like if you did like a fermentation process.
Yeah, brew your wine in your greenhouse. I mean, if you want carbon, come on.
Smaller greenhouse,
there
they're saying
a
for commercial
it.
Greenhouse, probably tanks of carbon dioxide is super cheap to get. Maybe try to do one of these sort of permaculture industrial compounds where you've got a winery or a brewery that can vent into your greenhouse. So there's ways to do it that feel to me a lot safer. And the also what you're going to have with the brew house idea is if you are doing a fermentation process, it's going to slow down at night as the sun cools, and it's not going to put as much CO2 out when the plants don't need it, where the natural inclination if you're keeping your greenhouse warm would be to add heat at night, and then you're also adding CO2 exactly when the plants don't need it.
So my issue was this guy who kept interrupting the people who know, then he kept interrupting to be insistent. He thought that he was winning the argument by being interrupty and loud.
And
that
being interrupted.
And so basically, then when you tried to interrupt him interrupting and say, no, wait, I want to finish, then he's like, no, now you're interrupting me. He's being an ass. So the key is that his philosophy was that if you know what you're doing, then this can be a tool in your tool set. And the thing I want to say no, absolutely not, is because I think that, it's like we talked about how dangerous it is for somebody to make rocket hot water, and Caleb has the chops to make it. Like, let's say we have somebody who has the chops to do this. There's a couple of things that are going to happen. That person is now, instead of setting something up so that it will work for the next 5 years safely, that instead, every time you do this, you have to have the discipline to do it right. You can't make any mistakes. Ever. Ever. And you know what? I don't care how fucking smart you are, you're going to make a mistake, and that's going to cost you your life. Or, even worse, it's going to cost the life of somebody who we actually kind of want to stick around the planet instead of people who want to push their stupid ideas onto others. So it's kind of like, I feel like this is just a recipe for disaster. This is dependent. The safety of other people is dependent, absolutely dependent, on the discipline of the individual that implements it. And basically the odds are saying, in time, you will die. I mean, there's not a probability of life out of this if you're going to do it more than 1 year. The probability of death is I would say 100%.
Well, the probability of death is always 100%.
The probability of premature death is 100%.
Yes, yeah. Eventually somebody's going to screw up, and somebody's going to die due to something like this. And it may be one greenhouse never has a problem. Right? And it may be another greenhouse, because the guy says that more than one, has 50 problems, okay? Or somebody's not paying attention. And it's not just, this is where we start talking about complex systems in our rocket stoves as well.
The more things you put on it to make it work, the more better your chances are that one of those things will fail. It's like that culture that had like a 17-step process to make a deadly root into a usable starch flour. It's like you skip one step. How do you evolve a 17-step process where you skip one step and then you're dead?
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who were hungry enough to eat things that might be poison in the process of that culture, figuring out how to do that.
I have one more thing to add before we change topics, and that is that most of the people that are listening to this podcast or are considering any of this are going to build a small greenhouse, put in a 6-inch system, and then if the air intake for the rocket mass heater is in the same airspace as the exhaust, I cannot help but think that it would be about 10 to 12 minutes before all of the oxygen is consumed. The fire then goes out due to lack of oxygen, and now there's all kinds of crazy-ass gases coming out of here. And when those people die, which they will, is it because that they died of a rocket mass heater, or is it because they died because they were trying to do something stupid with carbon dioxide?
It's like parking your car in the garage, right? It's like wiring your exhaust in your car back into your... It's a form of suicide, right?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Hold on. That's a great direction. It's like taking your car exhaust and wiring it back into your air intake. Instead of doing that like directly, you're doing it through the grill of your car.
You're doing it through the passenger compartment of your car.
Yeah.
Or like sealing up your garage and running your car in the garage while you sit, you know.
But basically you're doing exactly that, only you've made the engine 10 times bigger.
Yes.
So eventually the car engine is going to stop because the car engine needs oxygen too.
Yes. Eventually.
But on top of that, I like the point that you were making earlier, which is that when are people going to light this fire? Are they going to light it in the morning when there's sunlight and therefore the plants want carbon dioxide and are giving off oxygen? Or are they going to light the fire in the evening when the plants need oxygen and are then giving off carbon dioxide? And so the thing is, they're going to light it in the evening because they're stupid and they don't know the full story.
They're stupid and they're ignorant. And it's smart people who think they know more than they do who are going to probably try this anyway. So, shout out to all the smart people. I'd rather you live to be wise.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty much on that.
Have we covered that one good?
Yes, we've covered that one.
There's a bigger issue that I wanted to touch on that this is part of, which is this idea that I'm going to fully consume my own waste products. Like I said, it's essentially, it's a form of self-flagellation, environmental
self-flagellation.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like trying to eat your own shit so that you don't have to use anything and mess up the outside world. Excuse me, French, but there's a reason that poop is gross. There's a reason that we try to get the smoke out of the house. You're an organism living in an environment, right? You are part of nature. There is human nature, there is worm nature, there is germ nature. There are all of these parts of nature that all kind of have their job to do. And if you're trying to control that natural cycle in a very small loop, where you take the plants in your greenhouse, you burn them to produce what the plants need, and you keep that in the greenhouse, it's like the Biosphere Project, right? And then you're supposed to, you eat some of the plants, and then you burn the straw from the plants, and you're running out of fuel, so then what are you going to do, like poop in the rocket stove? You can't create a full, complete life cycle that you can't be the whole planet in one little tiny pocket. There's not enough diversity. There's not enough room for the waste products to safely go through multiple decomposition processes before they end up getting used again. Fresh exhaust from a rocket mass heater has a lot of really reactive compounds in it, but it's a lot safer to let them react with dust in the air and fog and get rained down and get soaked up by creatures in the soil that can use that reaction as part of the nutrition. Your lungs are not designed to do that job. And your plants are not necessarily designed to do that job in that quantity of fire exhaust. So when you try to, it's one of the examples where this was really widely known in the news was the mad cow disease thing. If you're using, you're feeding chicken waste to, what was it, chicken
no,
waste?
No, no, it was if you're feeding cow brains to cow.
Cow brains, oh, well, you can do it, if you do it in one step, it's really pretty guaranteed disaster. If you do it, I think they were feeding cow bits to pigs, pig bits to chicken bits to cows.
That's totally safe. They're feeding cow brains to cows.
I feel like three steps in the cycle is still too close to be safe. Like, I'd like to see the cows eating grass.
I'm not so sure that that's completely safe.
And maybe you let the chickens eat maggots out of the cows, and then you let the pigs eat something, and then you let the pasture have a little bit of a rest, and then you have the cows eat the grass again, rather than the pigs or the chickens.
So let's keep in mind that you're taking an herbivore, and you're feeding it cow brains. You're feeding it meat.
Zombie cows, basically. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we don't need to be zombies. We don't need to be eating each other or eating our own waste to be part of nature. There are jobs that human beings are really good at in nature. There are jobs that worms and mushrooms are really good at in nature. There are jobs that animals are really good at, that plants are really good at. There's like this whole beautiful diversity of life. And if you're trying to condense down a cycle and use every single part of the waste product, you're ignoring some basic laws of nature about how things work.
I think that, following what you're saying, this is why I'm not a big fan of aquaponics and am a fan of aquaculture.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what's being proposed is like, I want to do things in a way that is not natural. And so then it's like, I want to change the levels of things in the atmosphere in order to be able to hopefully improve plant growth. And it's kind of like, I think that if these people do this, I mean, not only, well, it's contrary to nature. It's contrary to the way the natural...
It's human nature, though. It's human nature to mess with things. The
true
thing I want to point out is that when you are using a custom-designed propane burner to create a carbon dioxide boost for a greenhouse, you're using an object whose primary product is clean carbon dioxide, right? You are not using a waste product. You are consuming fuel to produce a primary product of carbon dioxide. If instead you use an object that's primary design function is heat, and you're trying to use the waste product, the byproduct for your greenhouse, yes, it's stacking functions, but you're not, you can't stack functions into a complete circle in a very small space. The planet is very big. You can go all the way around and gravity works the same direction. Like, it's a huge system that we're trying to replicate a part of, but you have to let the system in the door. You have to open the door and the window and let that cycle be a little small cycle within the larger system if you want to thoroughly process all of the waste. You need a bigger circle than a tiny little green.
So now you're expressing that you prefer the idea of using the propane burner as a means of doing this exchange. And I want to address that in two parts. One part is that you're still taking oxygen out of the environment and then putting other stuff into it. And I'm against that. I don't even like the idea of gas stoves or gas ovens because it does that. And I think that people live in a house where they're like, oh, I'm going to cook. And then I think that everybody ends up slightly oxygen deprived by the end of the meal.
Well,
and so this is this is something that is my personal level of discomfort. Now I forgot what the second part was. Okay, but so that's one. That's pretty good. I still want to be more aligned with nature. I mean, I'm not a big fan. I mean, we've got the greenhouse sucks thread, the greenhouse suck factor thread. There's like pages and pages and pages and pages of why greenhouses suck.
There's a piece of the greenhouse puzzle that makes, like, your thing about oxygen-deprived cooking with gas in the house. This is much more true in the cold climates where people tend to try to really seal their houses. Sometimes people will overdo it. You need about a third of the volume of the house to move through per hour to maintain adequate ventilation to prevent mold, huge concentrations of VOCs, some of them from the insulation products. And people need to breathe oxygen too. You need a certain amount of air coming in and out, like poke holes in the jar, you know?
Right, right. I like that.
A person's first greenhouse often doesn't have enough holes in it. Like, a lot of the hoop houses are very basic, fairly well sealed. They'll go for a couple years, then they start having mold problems or too hot problems, and then they start getting into vents because that's like step two.
Yeah.
And so if you've gone from like little closures that are temporary, like cold frames, and then you go into a big greenhouse, it takes time to work out all the ventilation issues. You get the right boost in temperature. It's complicated, right?
Right.
But many of the greenhouses I see in people's first permaculture projects are going to be even more sealed than a northern home. And so we're going further and further into where it's not safe to have those gases
right.
in the environment, where in the situations that, like, the rocket cook stoves were designed for in hot countries, where you can often see light through the walls because there's not a lot of seal. It's more about shade and shelter. There's much more ventilation and much less danger of asphyxiation if you get the balance wrong in your atmosphere. You're not controlling the indoor atmosphere in the same way. You're just trying to reduce the particulate.
Yeah. All right. I think we're done with that one. I mean, basically, I think the three of us are in agreement. Don't vent your rocket mass heater exhaust into your greenhouse. That's a bad idea. The last thing we have to talk about is the wheelie bin outhouse. So Caleb and Krista set up a little outhouse that had a wheelie bin in it.
They set up an enormous timber-framed outhouse that had a wheelie bin in
that
it.
Beautiful timber framing. This thing is so helpful sound. It's unbelievable.
It looks like a Christmas card. It's got a deer antler horn on the door for the handle. It's just like ridiculously overbuilt.
Spacious and comfortable inside.
You can move to the other side of it, right?
Yeah.
But they
asked everybody not to pee in it, and
they use Paul Wheaton's wheelie bin idea for the composting toilet receptacle, so it was able to work on the concrete pad where it was built rather than after being moved to another location where they had eventually fly into heaven. So did you want to talk about, like, one of the things I wanted to mention is we've been through a lot of permaculture communities on our trip, and I've seen a lot of people doing the bucket toilet, composting toilet, with a 5-gallon bucket. And I would feel more comfortable with a pit toilet, like a latrine, where if you use a little bit of, if you've got the sense to prevent it getting in the groundwater, then you put like a mini roof over it so that it stays a little drier and you make sure you're not in your groundwater layer. But I've seen a lot of people handling their bucket full of poop, and especially in a workshop where we're on site and they've got people from all many countries with poop from all kinds of places that who knows what to
diverse
do.
Diverse poop.
Diverse poop. And they're handling it within a few days or weeks of it being deposited
in this
bucket.
Or it's full, and it was, and somebody put something in there an hour ago.
Right. And a bucket is a small thing. Sometimes people miss. And we were on one site where, I mean, again, for one person and you know which bucket is which, it's not a huge issue, but you got 30 people on site, you have 5-gallon buckets full of filtered rainwater, and you have 5-gallon buckets that people are pooping in, and none of them are labeled really clearly, and so you're kind of dependent on people guessing right as far as what to do with this empty bucket that is now circulating back around after having been rinsed out. Like, the 5-gallon bucket composting toilet system is kind of scary when you're going in to do a public workshop. And it's kind of scary if people are talking about finding toilet paper in their leaf litter after they've distributed their compost. Because I kind of feel like toilet paper is a good sign that the composting didn't happen all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like the composting toilet idea has been picked up and as one of these sort of people are carrying the banner for the fighting the good fight to bring permaculture to the world through composting toilets, and what they're creating is an example of a fairly unsafe system that takes a lot of fixes rather than something like, wait, the latrine is fairly well understood. It works for a certain value of works. It, you know, it beats people pooping in the bushes. And it's much easier for people to get that mostly right than to make this sort of small bucket composting toilet thing work. I think the only benefit is that it's easy to carry a 5-gallon bucket, so you can use it potentially in a house where you're trying to re-bathroom a house with a broken toilet without having to redo the plumbing.
Right,
you know, it seems like a very narrow range of solutions where it's an improvement over, the big bin. My experience with people is that people are monkeys and that there's no lockout tagout system that people won't lift the lid anyway to see what's going on in there. You know, it's very, very difficult to make a composting toilet that people can't accidentally break open too early and mess with. And very often people just ignore that part of the puzzle altogether and they're moving human crap around and feeling like they're doing something good for the environment. It's this self-flagellation. Like, I'm going to expose myself to risk because I want to be part of nature. It's like, okay, can you be part of nature by not doing dangerous things?
So now, I agree. So basically what you're saying is the wheelie bin, big success. The 5-gallon bucket, big fail.
I think I have seen people where, I mean, you wash your hands.
Let's talk about it in practice.
I've heard about a lot of, what happens?
I love my 5-gallon bucket. It is the best.
Even if it's in the family, what happens if your partner is emptying the bucket when you get up in the morning and you go to sit on the toilet seat and there's no bucket under there? Like, I've heard about that happening. It's an embarrassing story. I'm not going to mention any names, but it's just like, my experience of people in general is even the most thoughtful person, there are parts of their day when they're not really thinking that straight. And then you take somebody like, you know, Ernie's been hit by a car. He's in a fair amount of pain most of the time. Somebody who's really thinking hard about their design project that's due next week and they need to get it done to their client. You don't want to have to think about your basic bodily functions any more than necessary. You want the system to be simple enough that you can do it without stress. And I've seen a lot of people stressing over the 5-gallon bucket system, and I've seen a lot of places where they're not stressed enough because it's not there's pieces that are missing to make it safe. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of value in knowing you can throw sawdust in a toilet instead of wood ash to make it not stinky. Like, I think that's a huge improvement in generally in pit toilet technology. I think knowing that you can pee in the woods and that's fairly safe, you're not going to transmit a lot of pathogens by peeing, and knowing that pooping should be kind of handled more carefully, I think that's huge. And I have this little moment of nostalgia, like watching birds shit on things and plant seeds, that it would be kind of nice to be able to plant seeds when we poop, right? Like, there's a certain...
I don't think our digestive system would do that. I'm not sure.
You think we got too much
intestine? I think if we ate, like, grapes, and then we had the grape seeds, first of all, we're going to kind of crunch them up a little bit, but let's say some of them don't get crunched up. And then we go out there and drop off some seeds. I think once it's gone through our system, I don't think it'll arrive intact. I think some seeds might, but we probably aren't going to be eating those. Like, I think black locust seeds would probably pass through us okay.
There are seeds that are designed to pass through different animal systems in different sizes, and the fruits attract those animals and so on. At one point it was feeling to me like we're the only animal that poops with its hands. Like, we have to plant seeds by hand because we don't plant seeds with our poop.
Yeah, right. I'll grant you a romantic idea,
it's a
to be
romantic
sure.
Romantic idea.
Don't do it.
No, it's really stupid because what you're mostly planting. I mean, as a meat-eating animal, an animal that eats other animals, most of what's in our there's a lot of bacteria in our digestive system for decomposing meat, which means it's extremely dangerous to get that in your skin, or in an open wound, or God forbid, a puncture wound, where it can start digesting meat inside of you.
Yeah.
So, like with pigs, we do not use pig poop in natural plasters. We use exclusively poop from animals that are eating straw, hay, grass, twigs, plant matter, because there's much, much less pathogen transmission, and we tend to prefer horse dung or donkey dung because, again, there are fewer diseases where with cattle and sheep. There are kind of more disease transmission from closer contact with people more often. So it's just like, you got to know your shit to do this.
I think that the important part is like when you have a workshop to do a wheelie bin, by the time that the whole workshop's done, there's a very good chance. And if you ask everybody to pee away from it, and you might even set up urine diversion, that... by the end of the workshop, no one will have touched the wheelie bin. And then if it just sits there for a year until the next workshop, there's a good chance that what's in there will have broken down enough that it'll be like one-tenth the size it was at the end of the workshop. So, you know, in which case, it's like, nah, just try and fill it again. And maybe you'll never have to do anything with the wheelie bin. Maybe.
It does feel like a lot of wheelie bins. Like... you might end up just using two or three wheelie bins in rotation, but
I think
I'm just sort of visualizing the three wheelie bins sitting over in the corner in the various stages of their decomposition. If you have a lot of people on site, you definitely want a two-seater system if you don't want to touch it. Like, where you can have one seat open while the other seat is shut and working.
And that's
another
thing, too.
You can move out of there and use the same seat. So.
I think with a wheelie bin, as opposed to the five-gallon bucket, I think you make a good point of, like, sometimes people miss with the five-gallon bucket. However, the wheelie bin has a really big opening. Yeah, they're not going to miss. You would have to try really hard, I think, to miss. Okay, let's not go into that.
Yeah, people...
shit happens.
Yeah, well, and another thing I've seen a lot in these workshops is people coming from different climates and different places are changing their diets, and they're being exposed to new ecologies of bacteria in their new location, and sometimes people's digestive system takes a while to stabilize under those influences, and so it's not so much missing as sort of the shotgun approach.
Projectile, okay, all right.
So people do sometimes get, like... you know, Montezuma's Revenge or whatever, traveler's sicknesses just from being exposed to a new digestive ecology if they get. That's another reason to try to keep the digestive bacteria.
Maybe there's a way to, like,
people hand and mouth cycle.
Maybe there's a way to put something under the wheelie bin so that way when the wheelie bin goes into play, then it's, like, lifted up so that the lip of the bin is actually physically making contact with the bottom of the platform that you're going to be kind of sitting on. That way, there's no chance that anything's going outside of the wheelie bin. Zero.
There's things you can do. Yeah, and a wheelie bin gives you more options than a bucket or other smaller containers. I think some of the real... Like, I like to look at what the tradition was before we had petroleum fuels, like fossil fuels, to put a lot of extra energy into solving problems. And I see a lot of places where... Okay, there are a lot of places where people just got sick a lot. Open sewers, open gutter sewers, whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of places where people used water to wash those things downstream, and people downstream got sick a lot.
Yeah.
But in cultures where people are living in less concentration, and they're kind of living in a more sort of long-term sustainable cycle, I see a lot of this sort of like the pit toilet, the idea being that nobody has to touch it at all. If something goes wrong, this thing's not composting and it fills up, just like a septic tank or whatever, you cap it, move the outhouse 4 feet over, and start another one. And I feel like there's a lot of potential for doing something like that where you never move the composting material and then you plant a tree over it. You know, you could potentially sink... if we're using wooden crates instead of cardboard and plastic...
You haven't seen my dry outhouse stuff.
If you've got a system where nobody ever has to handle the material, whether it's composted or not, I think that would be an improvement for just for most people's human safety. I think the idea of not playing with poop in your hands is a really important...
That's a huge...
It's a really useful human taboo. It's a really... Like,
and the five-gallon bucket
people
need
are,
to have that fear, and then they would probably not do the five-gallon bucket thing.
The people in these tropical cities that have these brilliant like architecture and brilliant culture and are not grossed out by shit floating down the gutter, people get sick a lot in that situation. So I think the poop is gross and we shouldn't touch it. It's kind of a pretty good piece of folk wisdom that we could stick with.
So the thing I try to do with the dry outhouse is to make it so that no water landing on the land will ever touch the stuff in the pit.
Yeah.
And then you plant trees around it that will eventually get a root to the pit, and they won't shy away from that.
Yeah.
And they'll basically stick a straw in there.
You can tap it. You don't even need to begin
not
to
even,
plant a tree. But you're like
in theory, not even...
Yes,
not even tap it. Never. I mean, basically, the pit will never fill.
I have seen your design for that. I think I don't think I.
The tree
to the podcast,
will just keep pulling the material out.
Yep.
And so you will never move the outhouse. You'll never have to move it. The trees next to it will just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And
I think you might
eventually have to plant
up,
the right kinds of trees.
Yeah, with a sort of, I'm picturing like sort of tentacle root cellar of sewage. Where it's not sewage as such, but it's like this sort of image of the roots getting deep, like fatter and fatter as they're feeding on this stuff, and that eventually you might end up with the forest capping your outhouse for you as the roots reach the top of the level where you're trying to poop into it. And
that would have to be a couple hundred years old, I think.
Yes, it would be a real it would make a good tree for a horror movie, is like this really fat tree that grew on all the people's poop. But... Just because of the taboo aspect of it. But, if you've got an outhouse that works for 50 years before you have to move it, and you've, like, etched the design on the wall with your, like, burner so that people know how to make another one when they go to move the old one, because nobody who's still alive was involved in building it because it worked for that long, like, that's a pretty cool design.
Or you make a podcast. Hopefully podcasts are still a thing of 200 years in the future.
Do you think MP3s are going to still be readable?
I have no idea.
Next millennium?
I'm kind of having a hard time giving a shit. Okay, the important thing is that you just finished months and months and months of going to many, many locations where they did all kinds of different things to facilitate workshops. And you got to get a lot, you built a lot of experience in trying a lot of different things. And your point is that this wheelie bin thing that you experienced here was like, oh, good. This is so, I am far more comfortable with this This is so much better. This is like a huge leap better than some of the things experienced earlier in this trip.
I know you want me to say that. And
that's my guess at what you were saying.
Other thing I experienced was a fellow in inner city Cleveland who'd had his garbage can stolen because it had wheels. And it was more convenient for somebody to carry away their stolen goods in a wheelie bin than it was to leave the wheelie bin. And he'd, like, painted his name and address on it in permanent paint. It's like, not like anybody stole it to use it as a garbage can. They just stole it because it had wheels. So I can envision situations in which your wheelie bin full of compost might disappear one night, and then you've got a whole bunch of your shit that's been released on the world without your consent. You know, like, people are monkeys. And if you take a useful object, if the object is useful enough, it's going to get repurposed. And so, a 5-gallon bucket, I saw at least one 5-gallon bucket that had been rinsed out halfway. And that one was my fault. I set it next to the outhouse because I had just dumped it and didn't have time to, like, get it back to the indoor place.
You were required to move it.
You know, I wasn't required to. I just decided that rather than smell up the indoor bathroom where we were using a bucket toilet, I would take the poop out to the outhouse that day while it was still fresh and...
Oh, my.
It was just, like, it was my bad. It was totally my bad, but it would have had to happen sometime. And that bucket got picked up by somebody else who then had to be told, no, not that bucket. And we had to hide it. And it was just, like, there's just so many ways, especially when we show up and you've suddenly got 30 people on your site, that kind of system can go wrong. And I know all the dangers involved, and it doesn't bother, like, you know, people change diapers. It's not like handling a little bit of shit and washing your hands is not going to kill somebody.
Oh, good.
I just realized we're having this conversation at volume in a crowded restaurant, but... But there's just so many things that can go wrong with a portable container full of poop. So that's where I kind of, like, I like the dry toilet idea. I think that's probably ultimately a much safer design than something where you're moving poop around in containers that are repurposed from something else. No matter how clear you...
I just think if you're going to do something indoors,
like,
if you're going to have an indoors thing, I'm having a hard time coming up with anything better than the wheelie bin. And on top of that,
don't poop in their house.
My most recent, it's true. My most recent video is about outhouses, and it shows Steve Hekaroth's outhouse, and I came up with a reason why I don't like it so much. And that is that it's possible in his system, even though it's been in operation for years and thousands of poops and nothing's ever come out of the bottom, it is possible that somebody could have the runs or something like that, and liquid material could move all the way through the system to the very bottom, and it's fresh. Whereas the assumption is that which is at the very bottom is 2 years old.
Right.
So that would be a flaw in that system.
Well, and I've also, there are differences in anatomy that we've covered in other areas as far as between men and women, and often it's the man's job to do the dirty work. And so the man's designing a toilet, and people get sick is the other thing. I mean, you can go pee. I can go pee outside. I can pee twice and then go in to take a poop in the outhouse, and liquid comes out. That's the way the female anatomy works.
Right, that's women's anatomy. We've covered it in this podcast many times, the differences.
And so people, it's easy to design a system that works based on your own personal assumptions about what's going to happen. And if those assumptions are violated, the variety of assumptions that people will make about how something's supposed to work, and the experience that you might have later as far as what happens if somebody's sick, what happens if you've got babies, what happens if you've got little, you know, there's tons of country stories about the little boys tipping over the outhouse with somebody in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just like people are monkeys. You know, does this technology account for 9-year-old boys with time on their hands? Does it account for 17-year-old louts who are angry at someone on the farm? Does it account for somebody who's going senile or somebody who's really badly sick, who's got two buckets sick, you know?
Yeah.
I mean...
The bucket system requires discipline.
And my experience with people is that there are very few people who enjoy maintaining discipline consistently over time. Those people tend to do marvelous things.
And even if the discipline is there, the system still has points of failure.
But the problem with a system that relies on discipline is then we're only exposed to the germs of undisciplined people. Right?
Right.
The germs of disciplined people are a very small part of the total amount of poop that we want to not be exposed to.
Right.
Right? So it's like, I want a system that works for people as they are, not a system that requires people to change their nature in order to function the system.
A system that will work with humans as opposed to the...
As opposed to theoretical ideal people who are always smart all the time, like walking brains, that really poop is just an accident that they have to control. It's like a disease that you have to, like, put a Band-Aid over, you know?
I think
poop is a part of life, and it should work with all phases of human life.
I prefer the idea that we try to consider systems that are superior to the current systems that we have, where we poop in water, and then the water goes somewhere, and then it turns into poop Kool-Aid, and then we try to deal with the poop Kool-Aid.
Right.
And which is, you know,
and larger volume of
so, you know, our current septic tank system apparently is terrible, which is why we require people to ditch those in favor of sewage systems. And then a previous podcast, we went into great depth about the sewage system and where it kind of falls a little shy. And it's like, okay, all we got to do is come up with systems that are always superior to the sewage system, even when you have less than optimal people. So, anyway, all right. So most of this podcast is supposed to be about rocket mass heater stuff, mostly.
I think it's turned out to be the podcast about dangerous things that you shouldn't mess with.
Yeah.
We've got steam explosions, smoke inhalation, and people poop.
Well, I'm thinking, other than smoke inhalation, I'm mostly concerned about oxygen deprivation,
okay,
and killing all the plants in your greenhouse.
Things that you need is not to die. You need to be able to breathe, and you need to be able to eat and poop and keep those in separate places.
Yeah. Not to die.
There we go.
Yeah.
Not to die slowly, not to die quickly, not to die subtly, not to make your old age a living hell, and also not to get...
More awesome, less suck.
More awesome, less suck. This is the More Awesome, Less Suck podcast.
Yeah. All right, I'm ready to wrap this one up. Ernie, you got anything else?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I stay out of the humanure conflict. Deliberately.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I try to give examples of when I've done stupid things rather than, you know, spilling the beans on other people, because everybody's trying real hard. That's the thing that breaks my heart about some of the systems is somebody's got an idea, it was half-baked when they got it, and they're trying to bake it the rest of the way, and nobody knows if the recipe was right in the first place, but then when we show up, they're doing a ton of work. They're doing way more work than feels necessary. Try to make something and present that they're doing this sort of beautiful new thing to a large group of people who are, in many cases, rightly not going to be real impressed by it. And it's just like, I want people to have less work, more fun, and more safe.
Yeah. Right. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about rocket mass heaters, homesteading, and permaculture. All the time.